everybody. My name's Colin Ellis, author of Culture Fix, Culture Hacks, and The Hybrid Handbook. On the Culture Makers podcast, I ask leaders from around the world to share a little bit of their story and what works well for them in the world of workplace culture. I hope you enjoy today's show. Hello, everybody. It's Colin Ellis here. Welcome to another Culture Makers podcast. And today I'm talking to Narelle Burke, who is the Chief Human Resources Officer Insights for Asia Pacific and Head of Diversity and Inclusion Global for Kantar. So Narelle is an award-winning international HR leader with more than 20 years experience working in strategic HR business partnering and centers of excellence roles. She's worked across a multitude of country, regional, global roles and across various industries. In particular, Narelle is known for her work in organizational leadership, transformation and change, development of an inclusive culture, developing talent in agile ways, and the ability to turn around and build great teams. She's unapologetically authentic and human and brings an endless energy, drive, positivity and passion for people to all roles she takes on. And she joins me now from Singapore. Hello, Narelle.
Hi, Colin. That actually makes me sound way better than I feel some days, but I'm delighted to be here with you. It sounds impressive.
There are those mornings when you get up and you're like, I'm all of these things. And then there's those other mornings you get up going, yeah, I'm none of those things.
Let me have a coffee first and then I'll come back to you.
Do you remember when, because I love unapologetically authentic, I was desperately hoping I didn't trip over myself. Do you remember when unapologetically authentic and human was like a bad thing? Remember, like, I don't know if you remember when I first started work, my dad was like, don't you dare show any emotion at work. It's a sign of weakness. Remember those days?
It was. I remember having a conversation with one of my idols at the time. And it was like, to be a female and to have a role at the table and nobody should know what you're thinking. And then at some stage it became, you need to be yourself and you need to show emotion and you need to be human. And it's an interesting transformation, Colin. I can now be myself and I'm happy to be myself.
Yeah, right. Absolutely right. Unapologetically yourself. But it's an important point before we even get into all of them. Before I get to any of my questions, let's just talk about this. I think that sense of humanity in workplaces, that's the thing that builds lasting connections and relationships between people. And then from that, you really develop this sense of belonging. And that must be something that you've both seen and encouraged in the cultures you've worked in.
Yeah, it is. And I think, you know, if you've been in the corporate world for a while, it's a hard transition. So if you think about who am I when I'm on social media and who am I at work and who am I at home? And if you think in the last 2 years, I've got people who are on my social media and Facebook page who I work with and they know who I am and what I get up to. And I've also got people who've been in my home over the last 2 years because I'm working from home. And so I think this divide between your professional face and who you actually are has gone. And I think it's delightful because you get to know people and you get to build relationships that are lasting and you get to develop that trust. And I think as senior leaders at times where this, you know, this enigma at the top who has everything sorted out and understands how everything works and can solve all the problems. And what you realize is they're people and, you know, they're not flawless. They have, you know, challenges and issues like everyone else. And so all of a sudden these roles have gone from being, how do I do that? To actually, I can see who they are and what they're about. And I can see a path on how I could be there.
Yeah, because vulnerability was something that just got squashed. And that really, what, you know, whenever you were vulnerable in work, they were like, geez, what's wrong with Colin today? You know, it's like, I think you need to take some time. Whereas, you know, through the pandemic, definitely, and because we were forced into this scenario, it's the first time the world was really on the same level, kind of from a, you know, particularly for office workers, it is leaders were in exactly the same position as employees, is that vulnerability was forced on some people. And all of a sudden we were like, oh, that's what they're like. That they have a house, they have a bookcase, they have a pet. I remember interviewing one guy who was stroking his cat like Blofeld on a call. But these were all those insights. And all of a sudden we got to see people's humanity. And as you said, the barriers almost were removed, right?
I think it was the greatest leveler for an inclusive workplace of all time. So it wasn't about, you know, we were all the same height. All of a sudden you realize height when you go back to face-to-face meetings. We were all in the same Wi-Fi and connectivity. We all had issues on where we were working. Everyone got a view into it. You got to see kids, you got to see pets, you got to see challenges, you got to see renovations. So I think it's been the greatest leveler of all time. And my hope is that we don't lose some of that as we go back to a hybrid or working environment, because I think it's been more inclusive, better share of voice, better understanding of people.
Yeah, completely agree. We'll definitely come back to that. I ran a workshop yesterday, and because I'd only ever seen them virtually, someone said, oh, you look taller than you do on the screen. I'm like, I'm not showing you my full body on the screen next to a height chart, am I?
You know? You just lose that whole, you know, it's a different realm when you actually meet people and you go, that's not what I thought at all. And it's great because it takes it away, right?
So let's go back right to the start for you in the world of work. So what was your very first job? What was your kind of leap into the working world, and how much of a shock was it for you?
So I am a country girl, and you've spoken to my sister as well, Colin. So I'm a country girl, came from a farm to the city. And so everything was a new experience. My first job, my first realm into the professional environment was the call center. So call centers back in late 90s, early 2000, when it was new and an adventure. My first round was in call centers and actually operating there. And it was a different world. So, you know, how to talk, how to communicate, understanding the politics of an office and leadership and how it works, written and, you know, verbal, just all these communication styles and working through it, and also managing yourself and managing your time. So coming out of uni, where it was a little bit more flexible, and coming back into, I have to be on time and I have to be committed and I have to deliver things and I have to manage myself and I have to present myself. And so I think culture shock was probably the best way to describe it.
Yeah, we had a previous guest on the show who said that university taught him how to learn, but it's only when he got to work, it's only when he started work that he realized the learning was really difficult to put into practice. because of course what we do is we kind of learn certain skills. Obviously communication is something we learn from our parents. We have this developmental process. Then all of a sudden we're thrust in an environment where we have to make a message land with all of these strangers, half of whom we can't see. We're almost being, I don't know, targeted on it, particularly if you're in a call center, or measured on it. And you're like, wow, how do I do this, right? And there's a sense of overwhelm.
It is. And you get lost at times, because I think, you know, university is good at teaching you, as you said, to learn and to think, right? And so that piece. But the work environment, and there are different work environments. And I think understanding the cultural nuances and the people, and what I found particularly in Australia was, you know, if you didn't go to the schools or you didn't go to the universities or you know, in terms of what your parents did, and it was a really interesting understanding of you also learn about bias. So I think, you know, in my role, what the corporate world also taught me is, if you don't fit a particular bucket, and in terms of understanding bias, there are certain labels in terms of where you live, what you do, who you own, who you partner with, what your parents do, what schools you went to. And that was very new to me coming into the corporate world as well.
Yeah. Did you get some insights into the learning and development world? Were you involved in training? How did you kind of make that transition to the learning and development world, Nora?
Yeah. So what tends to happen is, if you're good at something, someone wants you to help others to be good at it. So I had no plan to go into HR or learning and development. I wanted to be a teacher, and there's a connection there. But what happened was by accident, which was, I was really good at talking people down. I was good at solving complex problems, and I could do it really efficiently and effectively, and had a way of relating to people. And so I ended up training people how to do that. So how to deal with critical complaints, how to deal with complex issues. And I did that across a number of different environments. And over time, it built up into, you know, a role within learning and development. And then I actually got taught how to do it properly with what I actually knew.
It's always interesting when you take what you learned on the job from other people and how to do it properly. And when you put the two together, you see that actually a lot of the things that you were doing were actually right. There's just a systemic thing in the back that would have helped you just that 5%. Do you think that's true?
I agree. So you know, a lot of it was intuitive and learning and getting some things right and getting some things very wrong. And then when I actually went and got trained on it, like, because quite often you go into something, you get trained on it, and then you learn how to apply it. Learning how to apply it and then learning the principles behind it help you to create that networking connections and the principles that you were doing intuitively or through experience, but you actually learn how to do them and then how to learn how to do them even better. And so I think anyone who's coming through on the job, going and getting that qualification is absolutely worth it because it helps you to connect all the pieces.
Yeah, I completely agree. Now, you spent 3 years at Metabank in organization development roles. And then, I'm really keen to talk to you about this. So then you went to Royal Caribbean and spent a couple of, almost 2.5 years there. So tell me what it was like, because it says Miami, Barcelona, Vancouver, Central America. It's like my wish list. I'm like, yeah, I want to go there, want to do that. So what was that like? You know, and obviously that's a big leap because that's a lot of travel, a lot of movement, lots of different personalities. Oh my gosh, where did you even start with that?
It sounded like a good idea at the time. So I think, you know, you go through life events, and I went, you know, not for this podcast, but went through a number of life events on who are you and what are you doing? And is the corporate environment really where you want to be? And there were some events. And so I'd been on a cruise before and, you know, my grandma said, you know, you'd be great at doing those roles. And so those events came together and I went, I'm going to apply. What's there to lose? And my company, Medibank at the time, actually helped me with my application Wow. and the presentation that I had to do for it, which was fabulous. So I had the full support of the company. And when I went on, it was, to say a culture shock would be the understatement of the year. So I was young, which, and most people that go into those roles have a lot more experience. So I was very young, I was under 30, and I was being asked to go on and do a role which was responsible for about, you know, it's somewhere between sort of 1,600 to 2,000 people when you look at change out, grossly underqualified for it. So learning on the job with very experienced marine hotel staff and all of that in an environment where it is incredibly diverse. So 50 to 60 different nationalities, different levels, different requirements. So I spent a couple of months doing that. And then the HR leader on board said, I reckon you can step up into an overall HR manager role and as a part of the exec team. And boy, did I get some things wrong. I think what I learned from that was you need to come back to principles. So who am I? How do I operate? Who do I want to be, you know, seen as in this role? And how do I make decisions on issues I haven't yet faced? So to give you an example, we had, you know, conflicts between different countries, which is a similar mm-hmm. situation now happening outside of the ship where issues would come inside. Now, how do you deal with, you know, macroeconomic challenges and political challenges on board? What are the principles you come back to? We had issues where in a particular scenario where we had a couple of people from the same town who were on the ship where there was a performance management issue and their family was being threatened back at home. How do you deal with that? We had issues where you would have people who got sick on board or where we had hurricanes and needed to get people off. And, you know, it didn't matter what week it was. There was a new issue. You don't have the answer to it. You haven't been through it before, but you come back to principles and how do you lead through change and uncertainty and what helps to guide you and who do you need around to make those informed decisions? Completely fascinating.
And do you think at the time when we go through these things, and I've failed myself a number of times, do you think when we go through these things, there's an appreciation that's a learning opportunity, Narelle, or are we better at looking back and saying, I learned so much rather than being in the present and saying, here's an opportunity for me to grow? What's your take on that?
It was definitely looking back. So so the HR and the staff captain work really closely together on the ship because you, for crew welfare. And I remember going, well, this is an interesting scenario. Have I ever been through something like that? We need to do to work through it. And so you're looking through it and you've got massive complications if you get it wrong. And yes, you've got safety quality management and you've got all of those standards, but it doesn't answer every question. And so you're learning as you go. And if you get it wrong, there's consequences. And so incredible pressure, incredible tension. And so at the time, you're just trying to survive and work through it and make the best possible decisions. When I looked back, what it taught me is I can pretty much survive in any environment with any issue and find a way through it. But that was later on.
Yeah, someone asked, I showed a failure not so long ago and someone said, oh, how did you get through it? I said, oh, I had a lot of help from Jack Daniels. And he said, oh, was he a mentor? I was like, well, not quite.
But it is, you know, sometimes when you're looking at things as a leader, you want to take a longer term horizon. And other times you can only see what's in front of you and making the best possible decisions as you go. And I think being able to work between those lenses and knowing when you just need to put one foot in front of the other and keep going, and knowing when you need to step back and take a broader perspective. And I think that's ability to, you know, to pivot and to amplify those two things as a leader is really important, particularly with uncertainty.
Yeah, I think that's a really good observation. And drawing back to what you said at the start there is you were unclear on who you were, what you wanted. When you came out of that and you know, kind of fast forward to New Zealand cricket, where you worked for 3.5 years, did you feel like you knew yourself better then? Did you, I mean, obviously you'd learned a lot in your career to that day, but did you feel like, hey, I've got a place here where I can really grow and I've learned enough now to be able to apply that day to day?
Yeah, it really was. So what it helped me to see is that, so I think imposter syndrome, when you go into stuff, particularly for me, going into stuff before you're ready and experienced, you kind of like, do I actually know what I'm doing? Like, and so when I came out of that, I think it came with it with a real confidence on, I might not know everything, but I'm confident in who I am and the decisions I can make. And it's about having the right people around me to support that learning as I grow. And so it definitely gave me that, because New Zealand cricket was a different extreme altogether, where I didn't know it, absolutely trying to understand the game and the people and how it works. But those lessons helped to go, coming back to principles, coming back to how you make decisions and how you navigate that, and ensuring you got the right support, and then just confidence in backing yourself.
And you were awarded, I think it was when you were at cricket, you were awarded Young HR Practitioner of the Year by the Human Resources Institute of New Zealand, which must have been a really good kind of validation that actually you're on the right track.
Yeah, it was. And I wasn't going to apply for it. So I think, you know, winning that, and particularly in Canterbury, where it is, you know, it's a, you know, there's a different way of doing things in New Zealand. And I think someone said to me, you should do this, you should enter it, and we'll put you forward. And I think that's been something throughout all of my career, is having people who sponsor you and see what you can do before you can do it. So it was a great process to go through to actually confirm what I was doing and to get validated by my peers on it. But I think the really important thing behind that was, I don't think I would have done that on my own. I had a really good support and sponsorship network who helped me to see that before I could.
Yeah, that's one of the questions I had for you in looking at your career. Is that something that you actively seek, Narelle? You know, do you look for people that you can learn from? Is it, you know, did you always try and look for those either informal or more formal mentors and coaches?
The right answer is yes. The correct answer is no. So I think my encouragement to people would be to look for that. I think part of my style is creating connections and creating relationships and navigating networks. So you know, being able to seek out people who can support and looking for mutual benefit, which is how can I help you and what can I learn and grow from you? So I naturally seek that out. And I think that's where the benefit came in, is I wouldn't have called them necessarily sponsors at that time, but because of the way I partnered and the way I worked with people and the connections, they became sponsors for me. So if I'm looking back, what have I learned? Sponsorship is really important. How do you do it deliberately, particularly if you're not confident developing those networks? Actively seek it out.
So after cricket, you spent 4 years at Nielsen in Singapore, and you're now at Kantar, based in Singapore. So I'm really interested in your global role around inclusion and diversity, and getting your view on where are we as a world with inclusion and diversity. You mentioned about the pandemic and how it was a great leveler, but what's your view on kind of globally what we need to do to improve and to get better at this thing, rather than just send everyone on a training course?
Doesn't work. So I think it's an absolute privilege being in a global role like this, and the ability to really make change. And I think so if I take a couple of different lenses, where do I think we're at as a world? I think over the last couple of years, we've become more divided. I think the pandemic has taken us from globalized to very market and localized. If you look at the Microsoft data on Teams, mm-hmm. our connections have decreased. So we're talking to less people, less broader networks as we're doing that. If you look at mental health across the globe, it has dropped. If you look at the roles in which women play in the household, it has dropped. And if you look at something that we do at Kantar, which is called the Reykjavik Index, social attitudes towards women in leadership and other populations is decreasing with our generations. So younger generations has not improved. And so when you take all of that into account, I think as a global community, I think we have never had more investment, more training, more focus on inclusion and diversity. And I think there are some big factors at play that we need to actively acknowledge and fight against, because this is going to come into our workforce over the next couple of generations. So I don't think we're doing enough. I don't think we're acknowledging the issues that exist. I don't think we have the broadest perspective on things. I think we look at the new and shiny and events to help us make us feel good and to tick a box. What I don't think we're doing well enough is sustainable change. The small decisions individuals make every day to question why they're making those decisions, and whether they are making a decision based on learnt behavior and potentially unconscious bias, or are they making a deliberate decision? And the other piece that I would add is I think we're very good at seeing what doesn't fit. So I'm hiring a role. I want these people with these things. You don't fit. Instead of going, I want someone with these things, what do you bring that mm-hmm. is new or different that can add? And so we look for deficit rather than how we can bring new things into the organization. I think we've got a lot of work to do to really close that gap.
Fantastic insights, because I think that, and one of the things that I said is that when it comes to inclusion and diversity, we're good at talking, but no good at doing. And, you know, for years, what we've done is promoted people based on technical expertise and length of tenure. What we haven't done is given the insights to help them with their attitudes towards the bigger issues, such that they can make more informed decisions. I agree. I think there is greater division than there's ever been before. And then you throw in proximity bias. I've always worked in an office all of my life, so I'm going to favor Narelle because I see her in the office. And if she's not in the office, then she's not as committed as all the other people who are in the office. And we've got those things. And so I think our education programs, particularly for existing leaders, need to match the expectation of the emerging leaders, such that we can all grow together rather than waiting. And I still feel that we're in this position. When the next generation of leaders come through, what they'll do is, it's like, we can't wait. We can't wait that long.
We can't. And I think it's things that, even if you look on social media, so an example is what's coming in from outside, and you see the public discourse and comment, and you read through those, and you read through your Facebook, and you read through Twitter, and you look at the media. And what we are teaching people is being adversarial and blocking people, or defriending them, or not, or engaging in a way that is just lacks respect and understanding and a different perspective. I think we are training people that is okay. And I think, you know, we're really lucky in Kantar that we, you know, one of the things we've had is disruption talk, which is, let's get those issues and let's bring them to light and let's have a debate on it. and let's discuss the issues that are hidden that no one wants to talk about. And so how do we do that? Things like age bias or things around, you know, political bias or any type of bias that occurs. And we're having those debates because I think social comes inside. Employees are consumers. They're a part of society. All of those issues come inside, whether it's hidden or overt. And so how do you discuss them in a way where people get perspective? I don't have to agree with you, but I can see how you think and why you're doing it that way. And I can understand it and I can have empathy around that. And I can make different decisions based on the new information I've got. And I think one of the fundamentals in organizations is first line managers and managers who are having everyday conversations. Who gets the opportunities? Who gets the experiences? Who's on the calls? Who do you bring into the conversation and who are you hearing? Those things make a fundamental difference on who gets promoted, who gets rewarded, and who gets the career.
Just awesome. Love that. I'm going to listen to this podcast over and over again myself. Just totally educated. Literally could speak to you for another 25 minutes. I got one last question for you, Narelle, because I watched a bunch of interviews before I did the podcast. And at one of the videos that I watched, you talked about ongoing relevance and the need for leaders to constantly educate themselves. So other than kind of standard training programs, what are the things that you do to educate yourself in the world of work, a world of workplace culture? You're clearly someone who's passionate about creating these great environments where people can flourish. So what do you do to keep yourself relevant?
And that was a great comment. I'm glad I said that.
It was a really good comment. I know.
It was really good. So I think, you know, that holistic perspective applies to everything. And so it's not just training and being good at what you currently do. It's seeing connections. So I work in HR. People is what, you know, people is my specialization in different areas, but I'm curious about what's happening in market research and insights and technology and how those things come together. In terms of the people that I talk to frontline employees. I talk to my nieces and nephews. I talk to a broad spectrum of people from different backgrounds, different environments who are impacted in different ways. And so I think for leaders, it's not just the formal learning that you do. It's not just the people you talk to in your organization. It's taking a broader lens and being curious about the world and understanding how those things come together and the different conversations happening. My biggest concern right now is that people with their networks and connections in COVID have become very isolated, and you end up in an echo chamber of people who think like you, who have the same views, the same beliefs as you. And I think my encouragement to everyone is start bringing different voices in. Listen to different people, even if you disagree with the point of view, challenge it, understand why, and just bring that curiosity and perspective back in. I think it's amazing, and you learn a lot about yourself and the people around you.
Narelle, it has been an absolute pleasure, not just to talk to you, but just to listen to you. It really has. I'm going to go back and play this and make loads and loads of notes. And then, like a good podcast, I'm going to pass the ideas off as my own. It has been fabulous. Thank you so much for spending time talking to us on the Culture Makers podcast today.
Colin, it's been a delight, and you've helped me to relearn what I already thought I knew and bring it back in. So well done. It's been fabulous.
Thanks, Narelle. Thanks so much for listening to today's podcast. If you've enjoyed the show, please share the link with colleagues and friends or your connections on social media. Better still, why not keep the conversation going and join our community of culture makers for free? Share information from around the world on how to create a great place to work. You can join us at www.culturemakers.community.